out there, everyone in podcast and NPR land, and welcome back to the Front Row Podcast, the podcast for people who actually like movies. And it's here, finally, the biggest nomination day in the entire movie award season. The 92nd annual Academy Awards will be coming up here on February 9th, and they released all of their nominations today. It is the show that we have all been waiting for, and now we are here to break it down. I'm Jeremy Gechner, the editor-in-chief, and here with me, the host of Front Row Flashbacks, Mr. Ryan Lutens. What's up?
I'm really excited. It's the best day ever. I love this day. I've loved this day since, you know, forever. I mean, it's the day to honor movies and to get mad about movies. So
yes, all at the same time. Everybody is so simultaneously happy and furious at the same time. No other award show, no other thing in life maybe can boast that kind of hold over the human brain. But look, it's been an amazing year in movies, an embarrassment of riches. And so we knew going into this, with the Academy only have 5 nomination slots and such, that it was going to be something nuts. It was going to be a lot of people left out, a lot of films left out, but that it was going to be kind of all over the place. So Ryan, let's just get it started right here. The most nominated movies this year. The film with the most nominations was Joker, believe it or not. Joker with 11 nominations is the top nominated film this year, followed by a trio of 10 from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, The Irishman, and 1917. And then after that, we've got a couple of other ones in the mid-ranges, but we'll get to those in a minute. But those are the big heavy hitters here. What did you think of overall of these nominations and the films nominated?
For me, I mean, it's to be expected. I mean, we've heard and we've seen things about 1917, The Irishman, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and Joker. So to know that these guys were going to be coming out swinging, I mean, it was to be expected. But I mean, the biggest gap after that is 4 nominations, because the next biggest number that for most nominations is 6.
Yeah.
And the fact that these 3 came out swinging, I mean, it's a tale. But I mean, it's like you said, this year, the movies have been stacked. I mean, we've had a lot of great performances, a lot of great films, just across the board. It's been a really good year for film. But 1917 is really picking up award steam. That's really making me happy, because I love a good war movie, because it just the emotions you feel towards it. But The Irishman, Once Upon a Time, all great nostalgia flicks, really captured the era in which they're in. I mean, great, great films. So, I mean, yeah, excited for all of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And it should be noted here, I mean, like, getting the most nominations in no way leads to the most wins. You can reference La La Land. You can reference any number of films where if you get the most, I mean, that's great for you, but it doesn't mean you're walking away with all those statues. And honestly, like, when I see Joker with 11 nominations, that is, you know, kind of a big step forward for any kind of comic book movie fair to be the top dog in nominations. But also at the same time, I can realistically see it winning like 2 of those. So
I was thinking the same thing. Only 2. Like, I look at them like, you know, that I'm glad it got nominated, but really there's 2 strong that it's going to come in strong 4. So
yeah, exactly. And well, and you know, there is a more general point to be made about comic book movies, but we'll get to that in a second there, because you were right. You referenced the other nominees of the 6. There's a quadratic here of 6 nominees from Parasite, Marriage Story, Little Women, and Jojo Rabbit. And I'll go right there, is that Jojo Rabbit garnering 6 nominations. That
Holy
was
crap.
Really something very surprising to me, because this has undoubtedly been, I think, one of the most divisive films of the year. You literally either see it as a work of genius or as trash. And I don't know, man. It's one of those things. It's Taika Waititi's flavor. Were you surprised by 6 nominations for Jojo Rabbit?
I was, and you know, it's completely mind-boggling, because the critics have been divided over this film all year. I mean, you either love it or you hate it. You know, yeah. I'm going to butcher the guy's name,
Taika Waititi. Yep,
Taika Waititi. He is a very prolific director, and when he sets his mind to do something, he does it, and he does it 110%.
Uh-huh.
You know, What We Do in the Shadows, Thor Ragnarok. This guy is amazing. One award that I wish he would have gotten nominated for was director, because,
right?
You know, that's what it should be nominated for. You know, there's one that I don't necessarily agree with Jojo Rabbit, and that's ScarJo getting the supporting. I think there's others in that field that deserve it more than she does.
Right.
She's getting it for Marriage Story, and rightly so. She deserves it. But huge shock with how many awards Jojo Rabbit actually pulled away with.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. Like Waititi did get, I believe, the
screenplay.
A screenplay nomination as well, which that was the one that really blew me away. Was it kind of crashed the party there. But there were a couple of party crashers in this sense. And I think the biggest one that you got to say is Bong Joon-ho's Parasite. Now, this one, obviously, it's been earmarked for the best foreign language film all year long. It is, yep. It has wire to wire been the best reviewed film of the year. And I wrote in my Golden Globes reaction was like, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if Parasite can kind of break through into these other categories that, you know, typical dramas get to. And it did. 6 nominations. It got it for screenplay and writing. Obviously that best director one, and a couple, I think production design as well. Like there's a couple of other, I'll double check on that, but 6 nominations there. I think, Ryan, I think this might actually be something here. There might be some fire to this smoke, because sometimes the Academy loves to do this with foreign films that are truly exceptional. And this year is so divided on what everybody thinks is the best film of the year that maybe this one just kind of sneaks through and everybody's like, okay, sure.
I'm really hoping it does, because, you know, I haven't finished it myself, but the content of it, I mean, it's a very eye-opening film, you know, and some people can even classify it as a modern-day horror film.
Right, I would.
You know, and it's really thought-provoking so far with what I've seen, but this movie has garnered buzz since it was originally released. I mean, it's got 99% on Rotten Tomatoes. Everybody is talking about it, especially after they see it, so it's definitely a movie that I think is going to come out of nowhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's not get too far away from this. Obviously, the biggest headlines of these are snubs and surprises, and those come in the best picture and the acting categories here. Ryan, I know you have one huge snub that you are very upset about right there in that supporting actress category. So let's get into that, and what do you have to say about maybe a Super Bowl halftime headliner that's left nominationless here?
You know, it would have been great for her to do the halftime show one weekend and then win her first Oscar next.
Right.
But that ain't going to happen. So thank you, Academy. Hashtag justice for J-Lo. Yeah. Hustlers is a great film, but it is a movie driven by J-Lo's performance. She is the body and essence of everything. And she takes that role and elevates it beyond what we're used to for her performances, because we're usually used to her romantic comedies, but she is very straightforward. She's likable, but she's also a mastermind, and that's what makes it so great to watch. And the fact that she got robbed is probably one of what I feel is the biggest injustice. I mean, if you look across the board, there's two people that possibly could have taken it, ScarJo and Kathy Bates. I'm not going to talk about Florence Pugh, because she deserved it. That girl had a banner year. I'm not going to throw any shade for her, because she should have gotten nominated for Best Actress for Midsommar, but that's another story.
Man, it's like you're reading my article before I publish it, my man. No, it's this category is interesting, because obviously Laura Dern's the clear favorite. Margot Robbie's been getting this nomination every single time, so you get that. Kathy Bates has been like the stalwart of Richard Jewell, so if you're going to nominate that film, and plus it's Kathy Bates, so you
right.
know. So yeah, really you come down to ScarJo and Florence Pugh. Now ScarJo's been getting a lot more momentum for Jojo Rabbit, and clearly there was some big momentum for Jojo Rabbit here. So Florence Pugh really is kind of the outlier here, and she does kind of crash the party. And I'll agree with you, because it's like the year she had was nuts, because started with Fighting With My Family, which is one of my best top 10 films of the year. And she was awesome in it. Then you're right, the turn in Midsommar is one of the most grueling, like heart-wrenching performances I've seen in a long time, and I don't know how the hell any actor worked in that film, but like that would have been the weirdest shoot to be on, I think. But then yeah, like Little Women, it's kind of like the least impressive of her for the year, but it's kind of like, you know, that's the prestige drama, and it's still a great film in its own right. And it's just like, so yeah, she just kind of, you wonder if it's kind of the Academy saying like, damn kid, you had a good year. So we're going to nominate you for this and not the other one. But yeah, I can see where you're saying with Jennifer Lopez, and obviously maybe the hype was a little too overblown there. But who knows? It's very interesting. But if we want to get into some snubs, oh man, let's just get into it, man, because Best Actor was about as packed as you could want it this year. And I wrote that in my article again for the Golden Globes, was that there's 10 legit great performances this year, and only five of them get to go, you know, only five of them get to break through. And unfortunately, some people were left in the dust. You got Joaquin Phoenix for Joker and Adam Driver for Marriage Story. Those, I think, were literally the ironclad locks. But after that, it was kind of a toss-up for the other eight. Leo DiCaprio getting Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I'm told that is one of the best of the year, so I'm fine with that. But it's the last two where you have to kind of be there. Now, Jonathan Pryce for The Two Popes, it's not as bad because he and Hopkins have been racking up nominations everywhere. But Antonio Banderas for Pain and Glory kind of takes what I think everybody was expecting Taron Egerton's spot for Rocketman to be. So what's your read on this, man?
I don't know. I agree with you 100% with, you know, somebody had to take something away. But it's hard because it's exactly – these performances this year have been nothing more of outstanding. Antonio Banderas in Pain and Glory, they're saying this is one of his best performances of his career.
Yeah.
I have not seen it. I believe it comes out on Blu-ray and DVD next week.
Right.
So I'll be hitting the red box. but it's hard to say. It's a very hard sell because, you know, I loved Rocketman and he nailed it. But I just got done watching The Two Popes. And I'm telling you, if anything about that movie, watch it for the performances, not the content. Watch it for these two veteran actors just having a chemistry and how that chemistry unfolds, because Pierce gets better because of Hopkins and Hopkins gets better because of Pierce. It's remarkable to watch. So I mean, it's just, it's like I'm happy, but I'm not happy.
Right.
I don't know. I can't put it into words.
No, you're right. And I mean, like, look, Antonio Banderas has never really been one of the awards, you know, darlings.
He's an action star.
For his whole career. And so, and look, I mean, Pedro Almodovar, he is one of those prolific filmmakers. And, you know, just the fact that his work getting nominated here for that, if the movie itself doesn't, you're right, it's seen as a career defining role for him. And, you know, look, I know Joaquin has all of the momentum right now, but man, they do love a sentimental favorite at the Oscars sometime in this category. So
they do.
You never know what's going to happen here. But yeah, it's unfortunate to see Taron not get there, because I do think that was one of the best performances of the year. But maybe the movie itself, just like the musical structure of it, maybe it just wasn't what the Academy was looking for this year. Also, don't forget, I mean, Christian Bale in Ford versus Ferrari, Robert De Niro in The Irishman, none of these guys got nominations.
Adam Sandler, they're saying like that's the best performance, and he got snubbed too. And you know,
Adam Sandler and Uncut Gems. Yeah. And look, you could have easily made a case for one of the kids in Jojo Rabbit, Roman right. Griffin Davis. Like, there's just way too many great lead actor performances this year.
You know, and that's why I loved when you were watching the nominations. They came out because they know that there could be some controversy. Like, actors nominate actors. It's not the whole Academy.
Oh, so. Yeah.
It's they're trying to cover their bases. It was great.
Didn't you love that? It's just like, so the actors nominated these people, not us. Yeah, they did that for every single one. Best actress, I really don't have a lot to say about this. I'm really glad to see those Cynthia Erivo's performance in Harriet get nominated, because, you know, there's a lot of different ways they could have gone here, but a lot of people are seeing Awkwafina as kind of a snub here, especially since she won the award at the Golden Globes. You know, it's very interesting, because those comedy / musical awards at the Golden Globes didn't really get any momentum from those wins.
They really didn't, you know, and if you haven't seen The Farewell, do, because it's a very heartbreaking comedy. She and the grandmother, again, you want to talk chemistry, they were phenomenal. You have an older actor with a younger actor, and Awkwafina, she played it so well, because she has to play a character who knows that her grandmother's dying but cannot show it. And right. The emotional integrity that we see portrayed through her is just nothing short of, you know, amazing. One thing I have to say, you know, because I am a diehard horror fan, is Lupita Nyong'o was robbed for us. She played two roles in that film, but she really wasn't getting any type of momentum at all as the award season was rolling out. But it would have been nice to see her, because her turn in that movie was fantastic.
Yeah, and again, it's hard to maintain these acting campaigns through a whole year. I mean, these early films like Taron Egerton, like Lupita Nyong'o and Us, like, it's hard to keep them going all year long, as impressive as they are. But I definitely feel you on that one. Her work in that was fantastic. If you want to get to maybe the biggest snubs, hard to look at that animated feature film and not see Frozen 2. So, I mean, like, this is very, very interesting to me here. Of course, Disney is there represented by Toy Story 4 along with Pixar. But, I mean, this is very, very interesting because, look, it wasn't like it was badly reviewed. It was a very well-reviewed movie, and it obviously made the most of any animated film this year. So, like, what on earth happened here, Ryan? Why didn't it break through?
I honestly don't know what happened here. Like, this is the this is the biggest mind-boggling thing for me because Frozen 2, I mean, it did well review-wise. It did well box office-wise. It was generally liked. I mean, I have no words. None.
Yeah.
I'm happy that Lion King was not nominated.
Right.
Don't get me started about Lion King. Like, Lion King is my favorite animated, but this live-action animated, it did not appeal to me.
Right.
But Frozen 2... probably the biggest robbery, I have to say.
Yeah, and I in my article here, I'm about that you can read below, you know, if you're looking at this on NPR Illinois, it's that I think that there might be something happening in the animated world here, Ryan. And I think it's that maybe kind of like in the 70s when Best Pictures nominees started moving away from what was seen as popular, you know, when they really started going towards more of those Scorsese and Coppola, like indie drama type stuff. Maybe this is what's happening with the animated feature. Now, don't forget, people, this award's only 19 years old now. It started in 2001. So maybe right now we're seeing that they're not willing to just simply nominate the biggest animated features of the year. We have enough of them now that they're really trying to award, you know, boldness and going for something different. You certainly see that with I Lost My Body and even more a little bit with Klaus and even Missing Link with how seamlessly they did their stop motion animation. Yep. You know, last year it went to Into the Spider-Verse, a movie that really kind of redefined what animation could do. So maybe we're seeing a bit of a shift here. You're not just going to get a nomination because you release an animated film and you're a big studio. So maybe that's a little bit of a pushback we're seeing here. But if you're going to make that point, I don't know why you're making it on Frozen 2. That was a very good film. So I'm kind of with you there. But I got to say, though, my biggest snub has to go to Rian Johnson's Knives Out, though. I mean, this is my pick for the best film of the year so far. And I really don't understand how it gets one nomination. I mean, it's a big one for screenplay, but you're telling me you couldn't have put it in the best picture race there? I mean, it didn't deserve that.
This is what bothers me, is because that movie was so fundamentally sound.
Yes.
It had everything going: great cast, great director, great cinematography, great production, and one nomination.
Right.
I mean, it's you know, Rian Johnson, kudos, because your writing deserved it. But how many spots? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. We have 9 movies in the best picture. Give it our 10. We're allotted 10. Give us Knives Out, you know?
Yeah.
But we don't. I mean, Daniel Craig, Ana de Armas, all robbed.
So. Ana de Armas is the one that really, really kind of irks me there. I know Best Actress is really, really stacked again this year, but, like, man, she is so good in that movie. She carries it effortlessly, and there's a lot of stuff to carry in that movie.
Right.
And I don't know where this film went wrong. It's very highly reviewed. The box office was great. It made $100 million as an indie, almost independent murder mystery drama. Like, I don't understand where the Academy didn't see the merit of this film here. It just blows my brain. My brain hole, man.
You know, that's my second big thing. Frozen 2, Knives Out.
Yeah. Well, and I'll go on my rant then, as long as we're still in snub category here, because look, I mean, the biggest thing that the Oscars always get criticized for is that they're out of touch with moviegoers, that they nominate things that people haven't seen, that people don't really care about. I push back against the care about argument, because all movies like that are this good, you should care about. But, and I know I'm coming at this from bias, but the way that Avengers Endgame is not represented in this list, and our good friend at the network, Lou Hare, sent along a stat that was just really, really telling here, which it came from Jonathan Penner on Twitter. It says the Avengers Endgame, it becomes the first top grossing film of all time not to be nominated for Best Picture. The other ones that did: Avatar, Titanic, Jurassic Park, E.T., Star Wars, Jaws, The Godfather, and Gone with the Wind. All of those are great films. Like, you know, most of them show up on the top 100 films of all time. I don't know how Avengers doesn't garner a Best Picture nomination here, even if just for the impressiveness of a 22 film arc, you know, and just aside from that, it was well reviewed and stuff. This shows me, Ryan, though, that Joker got 11 nominations, that Endgame gets one, that the Academy is still not willing to award superhero film that doesn't look like what an Academy Award film looks like. You think of Joker, you think of Logan last year. That's the trend I'm seeing, and I really, really don't like it.
I you know, here's the thing, you know, this movie, regardless of if you like the superhero genre, that argument's out the window because Joker, 11 nomination, and it's a comic book movie.
Yes, it is.
Is it probably grounded in more what the Academy likes, dark, psychological, you know, big messages? Yes, but Avengers has that too. If anything, in that movie, the biggest overlying arc in that movie is hope. And that movie, I mean, that's definitely something that we need in our society today. And it made people happy. It made people happy to go to the movies. They saw the payoff after 22 films. And the fact that it's not rewarded for such is a bit mind-boggling, you know. And I remember the Russo brothers came out saying, you know, we want RDJ to be nominated for Best Supporting Actor. And it, sorry for spoilers for anybody who hasn't seen Avengers Endgame, get out from under your rock. But yeah, most people nominated for Best Supporting Actor died, and Robert Downey Jr. did. And not only along with that, his performance was phenomenal. I mean, that that last scene with Gwyneth Paltrow, that if that don't tug at your heartstrings, you need to get your
get an EKG quick, man. No, and you're right. And I mean, look, is it surprising? No. Is it disappointing? Yes. Because you would think that something like Endgame could break through, you know, that stuff, because you think of it, you know, it's not like the Academy hasn't awarded fantasy, you know, fare before. Look, Lord of the Rings, Return of the King won 11 Academy Awards in 2003. Like you've got precedent here. And the fact that, as Lou tweeted to us from Jonathan Penner, that it's the first time this has happened, it's hard not to see that as a bias against superhero films specifically, because it's not like there's not fantastical things on there. Jurassic Park, E.T., Star Wars, all nominated for Best Picture in their year. And you know, it just doesn't make sense to me that the Academy has fallen that far out of it.
It doesn't. I mean, this movie was very well put together. I mean, it does have those qualities of being Best Picture. I mean, the grayness in the final battle, the cinematography in that, great.
Yeah.
You know, the score. Why are we not talking about Alan Silvestri not getting a best score?
Oh, my God. Can we please? Because, look, I know score is always kind of like a hit or miss thing. You know, a lot of times some of them that get nominated in that category are – look, I studied music in school, guys, so this is why I'm always so, like, you know, guffaw about scores and stuff. But when you look at the nominees for Best Original Score, there's some there that you absolutely need to have. Like, you need Hildur – I always mess up the name.
Yeah.
Hildur Guðnadóttir for Joker. That's a great score. Thomas Newman for 1917, I can see that. Fine, it's a war film and everything, and it's getting a lot of buzz. But you know, after that, though, look, look, I love that John Williams gets a nomination here. We'll talk about that in a second. But Marriage Story, Randy Newman, fine. Alexander Desplat, what? We really need another nomination for him? I mean, come on, Alan scored a 3-hour epic, and he did it in a way that's one of the most iconic, like, you know, and don't ever forget that Avengers theme that everybody knows. He wrote that in the original Avengers film.
Yep.
So it's literally all his music, and it's one of the more impressive scores of the year. I mean, listen to the portal scene and tell me that doesn't deserve a nomination. So I'm sorry, that burns me. Do you have anything to say about that?
You know, he should have, because, you know, you look at Randy Newman, and this is the best part about Randy Newman's nomination. He gets nominated for Best Original Score for Marriage Story.
Right.
He gets nominated for Best Original Song for Toy Story 4.
Oh, for God's sake.
Two completely different films. Like,
yeah.
Normally you get nominated for both, but nope. So it's a head scratcher.
Yeah, and I mean, and look, John Williams getting his 52nd Oscar nomination for The Rise of Skywalker. You will never hear me say a damn word against that, because John Williams is one of the treasures of just not even just movie writing, but just writing, you know, music writing in the history of the world. And it's just amazing that he gets this 52nd nomination. But again, come on, give me Silvestri somewhere, man. I mean, that would have been a perfect out for the Oscars too. Look, we nominated the score, like, you know, Black Panther's score won last year. Like, it just still kills me. But yeah, don't even get me started. I can't let you throw yourself away from Toy Story 4. I couldn't even hum that to you if I tried.
I don't even know the song.
Yeah.
But like, Silvestri, the last time he was nominated was Forrest Gump. 94. Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So. Come on, people. God, what, 26 years ago? I mean, this guy does stellar work there. Yeah, so I don't know. We've been talking for a while here. I don't know if I have too much else to say. You know, we've hit upon all the snubs and the surprises. Is there anything else you want to say before we start wrapping up here?
You know, we're no longer in best foreign language. It's best international, but I cannot wait to see Parasite because Bong Joon-ho, he did The Host, which is one of my favorite foreign language. Well, now I guess it's best international. The Host, which is a scary movie. So, I mean, this guy is good at what he does.
Oh, and don't even forget Snowpiercer was his. What was the one with the giant, like, elephant-like creature on Netflix? I can't remember its name right now.
Oh, starts with an O.
Okja. Yeah, that was him. Bong Joon-ho has been making insanely good films for a very long time. And the fact that the Academy is, like, just now starting to see it and stuff is, like, I hope that it's maybe the beginning of, like, a Guillermo, like, kind of, like, resurgence of just, like, oh, wait, this guy now. You know, like Pan's Labyrinth was kind of that for Guillermo. Is all of a sudden it's like, oh, this guy, I see what this guy's doing. So who knows?
Yeah. The only other thing that I would want to say is probably one of the best reviewed documentaries ever is Apollo 11. And it's nowhere on here. That's probably another big snub because that movie does a really good job. There's no interviews, but it definitely just takes those real images and that real footage from the Apollo 11 mission and just tells the story. It doesn't need any type of documentary voiceover or anything like that. Very straightforward documentary, and it got snubbed. So that's another thing.
Yeah, definitely. And you know what? Usually online you can find like all these short and film nominations. Go online and find those. Those are really, really wonderful most of the time. They're five minutes out of your day. And you know, then you can try to make a informed decision on those. Right. The only other thing I'll ask you before we wrap up. So obviously the hosts of the nominations made a little light of the little joke out of the all-male directing field. Congrats to all those men. To give it to her there. What did you think of this? Because Greta Gerwig was obviously the big one that people were hoping for there. I don't know if you can eliminate most of these guys from this field, though. Maybe Todd Phillips for Joker is the one people are thinking of. But what do you think of all of that?
You just took the words out of my mouth. You know, Todd Phillips did a great job directing Joker. But to the extent where it's prestige level, I'm going to say no, I just didn't feel it. You know, no, nothing against Todd Phillips because he is a very good director, but I just didn't get that. I wasn't like, oh, the direction in this was fantastic.
Right.
You know, but I was talking to a coworker, she saw Little Women and she said that, Greta, did a great job. And I feel like it is a big snuff for her because she should have gotten some type of recognition besides, best adapted screenplay because, she is one of the premier, female directors that we have up and coming probably since Catherine Bigelow.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. And I've seen Little Women and yeah, it's a really great way that she directs this. She uses a lot of one takes. She uses, she plays with the narrative just enough to kind of get away with it. But she creates a real like women's empowerment thing here. That's not the typical way you usually see it with that story. And I think the magic trick she pulled off with that film is a little harder because you're right. Many things stand out in Joker, the haunting score, obviously Joaquin Phoenix, but yeah, the direction is always just kind of like, okay.
I could have done a slow motion scene of him walking. I could have done a scene of him dancing on stairs.
Sure. We all could do that. Right.
Right.
And again, you're right. Like this always gets into minutia. Like we're saying like, this isn't like impressive that what Todd Phillips did very well, very good job. I mean, you know, like it's just, I think if I compare those two together, I see more of a Gerwig case than a Todd Phillips case. So,
for sure.
All right. That is going to do it for this quick breakdown of the Oscar categories. Again, we will be doing Oscar spotlights for the next 3 weeks to give you a rundown of every single category, what we're thinking about and where it'll happen. Those will be a few at a time for each episode. We'll also be doing a bunch of full disclosures on all of these nominated films. It's going to be a very packed 3 weeks, people. And then, of course, we are really proud to announce we will once again be doing our Oscar party at the Hoagland Center for the Arts. We will be doing that right there on the big ceremony, February 9th. Come on down and join us. We're going to be in the club room at the Hoagland Center for the Arts watching live. We'll be doing everything we did last year, lightning round trivia on every single commercial break for some prizes. We can bring, you can bring whatever you want in there with food or drink or something like that. And then of course, on, if you're going to be watching on Facebook or if you can't make it, we will be doing live reactions to each thing that happened on every single commercial break. Yes. And, we will be doing also our contest as well for the Row Guesses the Oscars. We're going to be doing, all of the personalities, and we're going to invite all of you to join in as well. Give us your Oscar ballots and try to win some great prizes by outguessing the front row personalities if you can.
You're not. me and Jeremy got the Golden Globe, so
yeah.
I'm looking to beat you for the Oscars.
Well, it's like 11 or 12 out of 24, though. I don't feel good about my percentage on that night, though.
I do a lot better.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so if you want to find more from us, of course, go to frnpod.com or nprillinois.org or on Facebook and Instagram, The Front Row Network, or Front Row Reviews with a Z on Twitter. All right, that is going to do it. Again, so much Oscar coverage coming for you. Pay attention to the Facebook page, and we will keep it going. For The Front Row Network, I am Jeremy Gechner.
And I am Ryan Lutens.
And as always, we will see you in the front row. This episode is a production of The Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio, Illinois. For more information and to see the full slate of Front Row Network shows, you can visit frnpod.com or nprillinois.org.